The opinions expressed in the Spirited Sports Podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the Spirited Sports Podcast. From the ovations of the crowd to the tense moments of anticipation, it's safe to say that sports have a special way of bringing people from all walks of life to a united front. On this fun-filled podcast, Nick DeChico, Todd Ashtua, Tully Kaka-Latrice, and many more explore the spirited stories, highs and lows, and triumphs and heartbreaks that makes being a sports fan an emotional roller coaster ride. The Spirited Sports Podcast is the perfect place for sports fans to get the latest sports news, insights, and opinions. Fans are the backbone of the sports industry. Whether we're podcasters, broadcasters, or listeners, our journey to sports fandom has to start somewhere because we're all fans first. This is the Spirited Sports Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Spirited Sports Podcast, episode number 39. Another exciting episode for you here, Nick and Tully with you as always.
Yeah, the dynamic duo, Nick and I here today for this podcast. It is going to be a great one. Got a lot of fun things to talk about. So, Nick, let's get into it.
Yes, Tully, absolutely right. Let's get right into it with the NFL. Tully, we had quite some exciting news with the Seattle Seahawks and Tyler Lockett in particular and DK Metcalf. So the Seahawks have released wide receiver Tyler Lockett. The team announced on Wednesday Lockett's release ends a successful decade-long partnership between the two. Lockett racked up 661 receptions for 8,540 yards and 61 touchdowns in his 10-plus year tenured with the Seahawks. He departs Seattle second in franchise record books in all three categories, so receptions, yards, and touchdowns. By moving on from Tyler Lockett's final year under contract, the Seattle Seahawks save up $17 million with $13.9 million in dead money from his prolonged signing bonus. So taking that money off the cap for 2025 was pivotal for Seattle, which was temporary in a negative cap space prior to the release.
It's a really interesting situation in Seattle. No more Pete Carroll as head coach. No, he's with the Raiders now. Seattle's gotten, you know, used to life in a way without Russell Wilson, who, you know, we saw that failed experiment in Denver. And now, you know, a bit of an on and off spell with the Steelers, but, you know, it feels like an end of an era and an end of a chapter in Seattle. But, you know, with DK Metcalf too, you know, he's requested a trade. The Seahawks have actually agreed to explore their options regarding a deal. The news on Metcalf comes less than an hour after Tyler Lockett's release. After 10 seasons, Metcalf's request arrives on the heels of a 2024 season in which he wasn't leaned on as much as previous years, finishing with only 66 catches, 992 yards, and 5 receiving touchdowns in 15 games for a Seahawks team that really unexpectedly, from my perspective, that missed the playoffs despite finishing 10-7, which is really unlucky. Metcalf's campaign coincided with the rise of fellow Seahawks receiver Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who caught 100 passes for 1,130 yards and 6 touchdowns, proving to be the more threatening option in the passing game.
Tully, it was very interesting to see this turn of events happen. You are absolutely right that it is a end of an era in Seattle. These two guys for a decade plus have been the cornerstones for the Seattle team, aside from Russell Wilson, who is in free agency now, so we'll see where he goes. But yeah, these two, DK and Tyler Lockett, have been quite the impactful players for Seattle, and it'll be tough for Seahawks fans to see them go. But with that being said, it was, you know, when I heard the news go down, I was shocked. I was sitting on the couch on Wednesday night, looking at the NFL news and getting ready for the podcast this week, and I was not expecting this to happen at all. This came out of the blue for me, and I don't know if For anybody else, it didn't come up as a surprise, but for me, I was kind of shocked by this news, especially, as he said, told the news of both outcomes coming out within like less than an hour.
Yeah, I mean, with DK Metcalf, I mean, I think DK Metcalf doesn't get enough credit. I think DK Metcalf is a really, really explosive wide receiver, probably one of the more speedy wide receivers in the league. But I mean, I think this is going to be really, really hard for the Seahawks to be able to, you know, adjust from, especially if, you know, Metcalf does land somewhere else. But this is something which I think, I don't know if they'll be able to find a direct replacement for Metcalf. I think they'll need to rely on having pieces within really pick up the slack. But I mean, I think Seattle, I'm really hesitant to say that they'll be a playoff team next year. I mean, it's going to be really, really tough to, you know, with Lockett gone and now Metcalf on his way out. I think Seattle's going to, this is going to be a really eye-opening spell in Seahawks franchise history. But I mean, Nick, which teams do you think would make the most sense for DK Metcalf to go to, system-wise and fit-wise?
I would say the Chiefs. I think just a really contending team that they have a few wide receiver positions opening up, which could be a good fit. But honestly, he could go anywhere where there's a need for a wide receiver. And there's many teams that might need it, that might need a wide receiver in the season to come, for sure.
And you're right about that, because when if you look at the Kansas City Chiefs with DeAndre Hopkins, so D-Hop, and Juju Smith-Schuster, Juju on the way out, of having a system where even players not in their prime or fringe players who do come to the team, like DeAndre Hopkins, like Juju Smith-Schuster, who are, don't get me wrong, great players, but, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is not in his prime anymore, and Juju Smith-Schuster isn't quite the player which he once was. But, you know, both came into, you know, Kansas City and were part of a contending team. Do you think, though, if DK Metcalf, Nick, did go to the Chiefs, that he would be by far their wide receiver one?
It's got to be Xavier Worthy for me as the number one. That speed is cheetah-like with Tyreek Hill. And Tyreek Hill might be on the move out of Miami, most likely. So I don't know. Maybe we might see Lockett, Hill, and Worthy. You never know.
But, never say never.
Never say never, exactly. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. And it'll be quite an interesting process for sure. Let's move on to the Las Vegas Raiders. And the Raiders have signed their defensive end, Max Crosby, to a 3-year, $106.5 million extension, making him the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL. It was that was quite an interesting signing. You know, with Max Crosby, we saw that he might have been on the move if this extension hadn't happened. We saw that the Raiders might have wanted to move up in the draft this year, especially with a lot of the prospects being really, really good in the top five. So we might have seen Crosby on the move if this extension hadn't happened. But he has locked in 3 years more of Raiders Nation with Max Crosby. Now, we saw the highest paid non-QB, and it was essentially from Max Crosby now to Saquon Barkley. The Eagles and Barkley agreed to a 2-year contract extension, a new contract worth $41.2 million in new money, reported on Tuesday. The deal includes $36 million guaranteed with 15 more in incentives, and it's a lot of money for Barkley, $36 million. In guaranteed money is also the most ever by a running back on a contract of 3 years or less. This is quite big for Barkley and the Eagles, and he definitely does deserve it because he played lights out this season. He was most likely, other than Hurts and that Eagles defense, he was the reason why the Eagles got to the Super Bowl and eventually won it, because his run game was so dominant and people could not stop it.
Well said there, Nick. Just Max Crosby, you said it, obviously signed that 3-year, $106.5 million contract extension with the $91.5 million guaranteed. But I think Max Crosby is a really, really effective player. I mean, is a tenacious player, plays with grit. Fits really well, too, into the Raiders system, because the Raiders historically have been a team that, enjoy playing bully ball out there on the field. So I think they're very happy that they have Max Crosby locked up. But, I mean, yeah, I think the only thing that worries me with the Raiders is how long it will take them to really get back to where they want to be with regards to being a respectable football team and a team that instills fear in their opponents. I think bringing in Pete Carroll will change the attitude and the mindset of the Raiders organization. Just going back to the Commanders just for a sec, Nick, I'm curious to see where you're at with, obviously, Dan Quinn as head coach, did a fabulous job last year. Jaden Daniels showing that not only is he the franchise quarterback of the Washington Commanders, also one of the up and coming and on his way to being one of the best quarterbacks actively, currently in the NFL. Right now, I would say one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. But, bringing in Deebo Samuel, Nick, is it too much of a stretch to say that the Commanders are a lock to make the conference championship round and make that game this season?
You look at where they are right now. The Minnesota Vikings played well last season. I don't know. There's a way where Sam Darnold stays with the organization in Minnesota and runs it back. 49ers, probably this free agency, will make some big moves to try and get themselves back into contention. So there's a lot of different factors within the NFC that could lead to different teams making it to the game, especially with the Eagles being the way they are and so dominant with everything going on there. They have a shot, but we'll have to see. Let's move it on to basketball now. The LA Lakers, the new dynamic duo in Doncic and James, propelling the Lakers to a 113-109 overtime victory over the Knicks for their eighth straight win last night. Luka Doncic scoring 32 points, James scoring 31, and the Lakers extending their winning streak to 8 games by overcoming a double-digit deficit in the fourth quarter and defeating the New York Knicks. So now, Tolly, let's talk about how Mike Brown's firing ended De'Aaron Fox's time with the Kings. Fox, who was set in 25-26 to enter the final year of his 5-year contract, had warned the organization this summer that he was tired of all the turnovers at the head coaching position and declined to sign an extension during the offseason. So when the Kings fired Brown, Fox felt that his time in Sacramento had come to an end too. What are your thoughts on this whole situation?
I think it's totally understandable that De'Aaron Fox felt that way. I mean, look at that organization, as De'Aaron Fox has come out and said, was very tight-knit, with regards to fan interactions too. De'Aaron Fox mentioned how warm and fuzzy all the fans made him feel. When you cycle through coaches like the way the Kings were, it's hard for chemistry. Coaches, every coach has their own unique flair and style. And, it's hard for players to adjust in that sense, when one coach after another. But look at what's gone on with the Kings too. Not only trading away De'Aaron Fox, but bringing in Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, and pairing those two players with DeMontis Sabonis, it's a totally different look for the Kings. And you know what? I think De'Aaron Fox is a sweet setup now, too. Sure, it looks like that even the Spurs who's the team De'Aaron Fox is on now, the San Antonio Spurs, even though it looks like they're going to miss the play-in, he's playing on a young, resilient Spurs team who is without Greg Popovich, might I say, who's taking some time away to take care of his health, which I wish Popovich all the best in his recovery. But
me as well.
Playing with Victor Wembanyama there, playing, being that 1-2 punch with Wemby, who, yes, Wembanyama is the face of the Spurs franchise, but De'Aaron Fox is one of the key pieces there too. So I think that it'll all work itself out there for De'Aaron Fox. With the Kings, though, I think all these trades has made their window. It's definitely in the short term, maybe in a way, made them look like more of a contender for the short term. Nick, why don't you take us through the Lakers and Warriors, two of the premier brands and markets and teams in the league. But I guess the question for you, Nick, is are the Lakers and Warriors runs sustainable?
Are they sustainable totally? I think they are. You look at what the Lakers are doing with James and Luka. They're the dynamic duo now. Having traded AD to Dallas and getting Luka in return was definitely a major stepping stone for the Lakers. And especially with LeBron James's age coming into the picture, and we don't know how long he has left in the league, despite him playing some fantastic basketball, it sets the tone for a passing of the torch moment between James and Luka, right? It sets them up for the Lakers to be successful even when LeBron James retires. And, you know, going back to the sustainability of this run, you know, with the trade deadline, the All-Star break, and the buyout deadline for playoff eligible in the rearview mirror, teams can now shift their focus on improving their postseason seeding and escaping the play-in mix and simply getting it all in right now. That's especially true for the Western Conference, where 12 teams can realistically make a run for at least a play-in spot. And a number would have been 13 before Victor Wembanyama's season-ending diagnosis, a blood clot essentially in his right shoulder. So several teams believe that they are legitimate contenders to win the West.
Now taking it from the court onto the field, going through some soccer news here, Manchester United's $120 million gamble. You know, why is the Europa League, winning the Europa League a must? Well, failure to win the Europa League would mean United would miss out on a place in next season's Champions League, triggering a financial nightmare that would leave a £100 million hole, at least, in the club's budget at a time when money is already really tight at Old Trafford. In the first leg of the round of 16 tie, Barca had to play the final 70 minutes with 10 men after Kubarsi's early red card, but Hansi Flick's men showed remarkable resilience to resist Benfica's pressure, and Champions League Rafinha showed up again in a big European night and scored the winner to give Barca a huge result. Xavi Alonso and Bayer Leverkusen need to write another remarkable chapter in their recent history if they are to salvage the seemingly lost cause of their UEFA Champions League round of 16 tie against Bayern Munich after a brutal 3-0 first leg defeat at the Allianz Arena. The only good news for the reigning German champions is that achieving the unthinkable has become their thing under Alonso, having claimed their first ever Bundesliga title last season. World Cup final set to have a halftime show. This is very exciting news. The 2026 FIFA Men's World Cup final in the United States will break with tradition and have a halftime show. MetLife Stadium in New Jersey will be known as New York, New Jersey Stadium during the tournament, which was announced in February 2024 as the venue that will stage the World Cup final on July 19th, 2026. Now, transitioning from soccer to the ice, Nick, take it away.
All right, so let's talk about the Hockey East Women's League. The final is set, the stage is set, featuring two top-ranked Boston University facing off against the Northeastern in the 2025 edition of the Hockey East Championships. For Northeastern, their postseason theme has been the underdogs, no pun intended. In the quarterfinal matchup, they faced up against the number four Providence. That was an even tougher game against number one seeded UConn. While the 3-1 final against the Huskies may sound indicative of the resounding win, fans had to wait until the six minute mark of the third period before Skylar Irving broke things down open with one of her two goals of the game. Despite the higher ranking in both the quarter and semis, Boston University required overtime in both games to earn their seat at this weekend's final. First, a 4-3 overtime victory against the 8th-seeded Vermont and a 3-2 double overtime win against the 3rd-seeded Boston College, along with an incredible 38-save performance from starting goaltender Callie Shanahan. All right, so now let's talk about the top 10 finalists for the NCAA's Patty Kazmira Award. This announcement from the USA Hockey Foundation has announced the top 10 finalists for this award. The award has been given out annually since 1998 to the top NCAA Division I women's hockey player. So let's focus in here on the top three here for this award. Joy Dunn of Ohio State, Lila Edwards of Wisconsin, and Caroline Harvey of Wisconsin as well. Three incredible women's hockey players that we wanted to highlight here. Alrighty, that was an incredible episode. As always, Tolly, thank you very much for another great episode. This was great. The two of us for the first time in the studio today. So great work. Good job.
Well said, Nick. Yes, as I mentioned near the start of the episode, the dynamic duo, long overdue for Nick and I to have this. It was a lot of fun. A lot of amazing content was spoken about and so many exciting things to continue to come for the podcast here. And Nick, as always, it's a pleasure to work alongside you.
Likewise, buddy. Likewise. Don't miss our next episode next week. We have some exciting NHL trade deadline breakdown to come. So make sure not to miss our episode next week. It's going to be a great one. Alrighty, that will do it for the end of episode number 39 for the Spirited Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.